Imagine waking up in a dismal, rainy town where perpetual twilight hangs over strangely empty streets. This is how C.S. Lewis begins his extraordinary spiritual allegory, a journey that will take us from the shadows of self-deception to the blinding light of ultimate reality. Written in the tumultuous final days of World War II, this slim volume poses questions that transcend religious boundaries. What if our daily choices are shaping our eternal destiny? What if heaven and hell are less about location and more about perspective? Through vivid imagery and compelling dialogue, we're invited to question our deepest assumptions about reality, desire, and what lies beyond death. The brilliance of this work lies in how it presents profound spiritual concepts through accessible scenarios that feel both fantastical and eerily familiar, like dreams that reveal truths we've always known but somehow forgotten. The journey begins in a dismal street where quarrelsome ghosts queue for a bus, their petty grievances following them into the afterlife. Buildings stand vacant, streets stretch endlessly, and inhabitants remain determinedly isolated. When a golden bus driven by a radiant figure arrives, passengers scramble aboard despite ample room. On the bus, we meet various lost souls: a youth who committed suicide after artistic disappointment, an intellectual dismissing concerns about the twilight as primitive superstitions, and others clutching grievances like treasures. As the bus ascends, light transforms from mud-colored to mother-of-pearl to blinding blue. The passengers react with alarm rather than wonder, fearing they might catch their death of cold despite being ghosts. This gray town, we learn, is hell, not as punishment, but the natural result of souls turning inward, choosing isolation over connection and resentment over forgiveness. It expands endlessly as inhabitants move away from each other, yet for all its vastness, this hell is smaller than one atom of heaven's reality. The bus soars over a cliff onto a landscape of extraordinary beauty, a grassy country beneath what feels like perpetual early summer morning. The light has a penetrating quality that makes our solar system seem an indoor affair by comparison. The revelation comes. Bus passengers appear as transparent ghosts, man-shaped stains on the brightness, so insubstantial they don't bend the grass beneath their feet. The landscape itself is incomparably more solid than anything in their experience. The life-size solid grasp proves harder than diamond, and even a simple daisy stands impenetrable to ghostly fingers. Walking becomes excruciating. Each step on the diamond-hard grass sends pain through unsubstantial feet. This discomfort serves as a metaphor. Encountering ultimate reality proves painful for those accustomed to living in illusion. Solid people approach, some naked, others in garments seemingly woven from light. Heaven isn't ethereal while earth is solid. Rather, heaven is the most real place imaginable, and those clinging to lesser realities become increasingly ghostly. The borderlands reveal souls rejecting heaven through self-deception. A self-righteous big ghost refuses salvation when he learns a murderer received forgiveness, declaring, "I'd rather be damned than surrender his pride." A cultured ghost rejects the notion that the gray town is hell, finding this profanity offensive to his sophisticated theology. When confronted about sins of intellect, he defends his opinions as honest, though the spirit reveals he adopted them merely because they seemed modern and successful. Another ghost refuses heaven if it means meeting her husband Robert. While claiming Christian forgiveness, her words reveal her true motive. "I want Robert. What right have you to keep him from me? I hate you. How can I pay him out if you won't let me have him?" Each ghost clings to a self-righteous narrative that blinds them to their failings. Heaven's gates stand open, but they cannot enter while clutching their grievances and pride. Near a magnificent waterfall, a ghost named Ikey tries stealing a golden apple to profit in hell. Despite his efforts, a voice stops him. You cannot take it back. There is not room for it in hell. More powerful is the encounter between a dark ghost with a red lizard whispering on his shoulder. A bright angel offers to kill the lizard, but the ghost hesitates. When he suggests gradual change, the angel responds, "The gradual process is of no use at all." Finally, the ghost consents, "God help me." The angel seizes the reptile, breaks it, and flings it down. After an agonized scream, both transform miraculously. The ghost becomes an immense man, while the lizard transforms into the greatest stallion I have ever seen. Together they gallop toward the mountains, vanishing into the everlasting morning. This scene illustrates transformation through surrender. The lizard represents consuming passion. Its death leads not to loss, but to resurrection in a more glorious form. We must die to live, lose to find, surrender to conquer. Through conversations with George MacDonald, the narrator learns that the Grey Town serves as hell only for permanent residents. For others, it becomes purgatory. The excursions offer genuine salvation opportunities, though most return to familiar territory. When the narrator suggests heaven and hell are merely states of mind, MacDonald clarifies. Hell is indeed a state of mind. Every shutting up within one's own mind becomes hell. But heaven is reality itself. All that is fully real is heavenly. Souls ultimately choose their fate. Every lost soul essentially says, better to reign in hell than serve in heaven. They cling to something, what children call sulks, but adults name revenge, injured merit, self-respect, or proper pride, even at the cost of misery. This view of hell as self-chosen isolation rather than imposed punishment reveals how the damned create hell around themselves by refusing to surrender their autonomy. As MacDonald explains, there are only two kinds of people, those who say to God, "Thy will be done," and those to whom God says, "Thy will be done." The narrative concludes with a revelation. The narrator sees giant forms surrounding a silver table where chessmen, actually humans, move about. The table is time, and the giants are these same people's immortal souls. MacDonald reveals, "No, son, the bitter drink of death is still before you. Ye are only dreaming." As they stand in quiet woods, light floods the eastern horizon. Birds sing, it comes, sleepers awake. Glimpsing what might be the sunrise that shoots time dead with golden arrows, he screams and awakens in his cold room. This dream framing lets us engage with these ideas without accepting them as literal truth. Like all great allegories, it offers wisdom transcending specific religious contexts. Perhaps we, too, are insubstantial compared to the solid reality awaiting us. Our daily choices to forgive or resent, to embrace joy or cling to grievances, shape us into beings who can either receive heaven or find its brightness unbearable. Heaven's gates stand open. The question is whether we're becoming people who could enter.